Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Tracking radio show. Tracking is still alive and well. Join us as we interview master trackers from around the world. We'll hear their stories, their secrets. So tune in and enjoy all you hear. Welcome.
Welcome to the Art of Tracking radio show. Today's show is called Trail Nuggets, a mix mash of scat-related stories.
Where is all the possum scat?
Communication.
Twists. Health.
Scat.
Segments.
Pellets.
Color.
Size. Covered. Raised.
Scent.
Surfaces. Trail junctions. Diet.
Scrapes.
Placement.
Scratches.
Contents. Safety. For me, the story started with a phone call.
Hello?
Hey, Garth, this is Terry.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. Are you available to go tracking Friday?
Yeah, sure.
I think I found some cool something, some pile of gooey, blacky, tarry-ish, maybe scat stuff that really stinks, and we gotta go figure it out. So you and
cool,
Heather,
yeah,
you and Heather can come.
Definitely. All right. So
okay,
we'll
talk to you.
Meet on Friday.
Yeah, we'll call on Friday morning. We'll touch bases.
Sounds good. Thanks.
We're gonna meet. Okay. Bye.
The three of us walked down the old gravel road, pausing often to take pictures of ice formations over old ruts in the meadow.
Oh, hey, check out this ice over here. Look at this. How in the world did this happen? It's like in layers. There's like a layer of ice and then space. And look, there's another layer of ice and then space and another layer of ice. It's like a little stacked car garage of ice, but it's only like a couple inches thick total. And when you step on it, yeah, there's no water down here.
We walked out onto the low-lying dike to cross the beaver pond toward the cedar flats that held the mysterious scat. Looking for the scat, we noticed a few other things about the area.
Hey, look at by these holes. It looks like it's been used recently. The soil's all like churned up here. It's all black. It's darker, like something's been digging here. It looks like it goes right down into the ground, like there's water down there. Oh, check this out, right over here. The ferns are dug up. They've been eaten, and it looks almost like a mountain beaver, sort of like it's been snipped at the bottom. It looks like they were eating the little bottom parts of the ferns.
Upon further investigation, we conclude that the beaver was coming out of these holes in the ground that went right into the water, clipping off the fern leaves and eating the roots.
Hey guys, here's a scat over here.
We all come over and investigate.
It's dark. It looks like rotten, something rotten, kind of putrid and black and slimy.
Something very wet, gooey, and the most rancid smell you can imagine.
Like it's been digested and then it's like, maybe it's meat that's been digested. I don't see any green. Yeah, it's really... Oh my gosh, if you take this stick, you take this piece of little stick here and you move it, like, can you smell that? Don't get too close.
We all split up into different directions and start exploring around the area to see what we can find.
Hey guys, check this out. I found I think it's a fish. It's kind of a little bit of a ways from the edge of the pond, but it's all scaly. I can't really tell what kind of fish it is. It looks kind of big.
I continue on and come to a little creek that feeds into the beaver pond. Laying in the grass on the other side of the creek is a full skeleton. Hey, over here! We all gather around and examine the skeleton. Look at this skeleton. It's about 3 feet long with short legs, thick, short tail bones. The skull has very wide zygomatic arches, It looks like the eyes sit high on the head. Those huge orange incisors and big space before the molars. All the skeletal evidence and the habitat are pointing towards beaver.
Oh, so those weren't fish scales. That was the beaver tail.
So what do you guys think about that dark mystery scat stuff? Is all this connected?
Well, I do. I'm just really psyched. I was out here 2 weeks ago and I found that gooey, stinky black pile of something, and I remember stirring around in it, and oh my gosh, it was just so toxic, and I couldn't figure out what it was, but it was pretty late in the day, and I had to get going home, so I came back out again, and like 4 or 5 days later with another friend, and we explored the scat again. It was drying out a little bit more, and we looked around the side a little bit more, and found two or three different mountain lion scrapes with scat and everything, and so it really showed that this mountain lion had been moving through this area. So I was still curious if the scat was part of that, and you know, and so this is really cool because today we found the beaver and the beaver scales in the scat, and it just pulls it all together. It's a mystery solved.
Have you ever noticed that great blue heron's tracks often walk up a beach away from the water? You see a pile of scat, squirt, bird droppings, and then they walk back down to the water. But I have a little story about that. Remember, we were snow tracking, and we went out up the road, it's full of snow, and there were scats on the side. You know, every, I don't know, 100, 200 yards or whatever. There were piles of scat on the road. Maybe we saw two or three of those up. And there were bobcat tracks moving in and out along the road. And even went up to one pile that we noticed for sure. And the cat, you know, squatted and walked on. So it was, and it looked like it was in the middle of the road. And it was hard to tell if it was dog or cat. Other than we saw the bobcat tracks walking up to the scat, squatting, and walking away. And then we're like, whoa. Okay.
Coprophagy, the eating of excrement. It's common among rabbits and hares, often taken directly from the anus.
I saw the sign, written and read by Garth. The Olympic Peninsula, night hiking alone, 20 miles behind a locked gate. That was my job for 3 months out of each year, surveying for a threatened bird, the marbled murrelet, active 45 minutes before dawn till an hour after. It nests in old growth trees that have 5-inch thick branches that are covered with moss, and branches above them for protection. And those branches need to be 50 feet from the ground. These trees are sparse these days, only in a few areas, most of which are in parks, but we have to survey all the stands. The forest is divided by arbitrary lines. Each area is called a stand and given a name, a lot of times a silly one, and a number. This pattern gives us the checkerboard look of clear cuts. Each area needs to be surveyed several times before it can be cut, and in different places to get good coverage of the stand. Stations are placed in the stands. Flagging is tied to trees leading to the station. Map and compass are used to find their placement. So the flag lines go straight, and I mean straight, over cliffs, through thick tangles and second growth, even through streams, and usually in the worst spot to cross. Once a day, I check in with two other people that are working in the area. We are each other's lifeline. If we do not see the other person by noon the following day, we look up where they are surveying and go look for them. It's a warming feeling knowing that somebody else will come looking for you if you don't show up. Most of the time it's better to backpack into a station the night before, but this particular station followed a knife ridge out from the mountainside with 60-degree slopes on each side. I usually could find a small, flat area on the uphill side of a tree to set up my small tent, or a log to sleep next to, but not on this ridge. I hiked the blade until I reached the drop-off point, turned 90 degrees, and eased my way down the slope. I have to do this at 3 in the morning, I thought. I clung onto small trees and bushes. I felt more like a rock climber than a surveyor. I found the spot and flagged it well, put my feet up on the tree trunk in front of me, and leaned into the hillside. This will be a challenge tomorrow morning. I slept in the truck that night. The full moon cast shadows into the truck. My sleep was fitful. I should have just taken the time to put up the tent outside. 3 a.m. already? I put on all my warm clothes, grabbed my pack of survey equipment, and stepped out into the silence, leaving the protective cocoon of the truck. I stood watching the stillness of the tree branches, cast in the bluish moonlight. I flicked on my headlamp, spotted the first flag, and started moving down the trail. The dark camouflaged the steepness of the slopes. I stopped frequently to look behind me, a practice that became habitual, quickly, just to make sure. This is cougar and black bear country. My logical mind said not to worry about those things, they don't happen. But at 3 a.m., the logical mind is still asleep. I reached the turning point and dropped over the edge, climbed down to my station, kicked my feet up on the tree for support, and became another dark spot on the forest floor, waiting until 45 minutes before sunrise to start the survey. Time to start. I grabbed the voice recorder, took the temperature, and set my senses to watching and listening for the bird. The morning was magical. The full moon was setting behind me, and the sun was beginning to rise in front of me. It was around that time that it happened. What was that? I felt a movement. I did not hear it. No, it was more like my body felt it. Felt something move nearby. I turned my head to the right. A head was watching me. A round head peering over a log. It was too dark to make out any features, but my mind went to cougar. Go on! Rah! I yelled and waved my arms. The head disappeared. I listened intently. Doing this job, listening to the birds for 2 hours each morning, you start to get a good sense of when animals are moving around you just by the bird calls. It was those calls from the robins that made me believe the cougar was on the move going down the hill. I heard one robin go off, and then a little further down I heard another one alarm. Good, it worked. I can finish my survey. On the hike out, I looked for cougar sign, and cougar sign I found. A half dozen or more of large scat filled with elk hair that was densely packed. Most of it I walked over the day before. Off the edge of the ridge in the bushes, I found a stripped elk carcass that hair probably belonged to. I guess it's probably good to look for animal sign on your first trip in. We'd like to give thanks to our contributing trackers out there, Heather and Terry, for helping with the story. And we'd like to thank all of you for listening to our short stories on scat, and stay tuned for other short stories on different tracking topics. Thanks.
And we still don't know where the possum scat is.